Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by the better half of the Locked On Senators podcast, Brandon Piller. Obviously, we had on Ross Levitan last week, and so I just thought, we had to kind of complete the circle of the Locked On Senators podcast crew. So, Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time. How's it going? How's the adjustment with training camp coming back? How excited are you for the season to finally get rolling here?
Well, thanks for having me on, Alex. Always enjoy joining you here. And Ross and I have not collaborated our stories and answers here, so we'll see how different things are between us. But yeah, it's nice, Alex. For the last couple of weeks, Ross and I have been really parading. The rookie tournament is around the corner. Sens hockey is back. We're not going to talk about the rookie tournament. Didn't go as planned. So yes, I'm very excited about training camp and the NHL preseason around the corner.
Exactly. Well, the Sens have been so good in preseason the past couple of years and then sucked out of the gate. So rookie camp, who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But
Unless you go 3-0, then you can
then
name your team cup champs. But if you go 0-3, who cares? Doesn't matter. It was mostly amateur tryouts anyways.
It's all about the little victories in life. I guess, heading into training camp this week, here in Ottawa, just what are your the storylines or things that you're looking out for heading into the first week of camp? Any battles, anything that kind of springs to mind for you, Brandon?
Well, I think the top thing is you look at the new coach, Travis Green. I think the one thing that every single person in the hockey world knows and talks about him is his training camps. There's the famous pictures of, I believe it was Olli Juolevi with the Vancouver Canucks, where he's passed out on the ice during the bag skates. Oliver Ekman-Larsson puking his guts out and can't keep up with the rest of the squad. Those went very viral in Vancouver. So that's kind of the trademark Travis Green training camp. So the Ottawa Senators players talked a big game about wanting to be accountable and having a different approach to the season. I think they're going to get it right off the hop in training camp. So we'll see how that goes. But as far as the players go, still a little bit of mystery when it comes to Josh Norris, which makes every Sens fan nervous. I'm going to be, Alex, you know me as positive Pilsy, so I'm going to be positive, optimistic about it. I don't think it's going to be a big issue. I think he's going to be fine. Thomas Chabot, there's a little bit of question marks there too, but I don't think that's a big deal either. I think the big question marks as far as battles go are going to be, where does Nick Jensen start off in training camp? I think most people have him paired with Thomas Chabot. Everybody loves the Sanderson Zub pair. So I personally don't think you should break that up. Let's see if Chabot and Jensen works. Have them kind of as your second pair. So that's a big one. And then we're looking at, well, I'll stick with the defense. That bottom pair, it seems like it's going to be Tyler Cleven. They haven't really gone looking to replace or add someone else that can take that spot. So it seems like his job's locked in. But who's going to be his partner? Because really, you're looking at JBD, who had a nice year last year, especially he learned how to make himself a little bit more useful in an NHL lineup by blocking shots. He was blocking a lot of shots. So it could be Tyler Cleven and JBD, but that is a young D pair. You'd like to
Very
get some veteran help there. But maybe Sens fans aren't looking at Travis Hamonic as a veteran solution to that problem either. Excuse me, a Cleven Hamonic bottom pair may not be what people want. And then you start looking at options like maybe Martin Paolo. He had a cup of coffee in the NHL. He was brought back as well. So there's a couple different options for that bottom pair, which I think is going to be interesting. And then finally, I think the only other battle and training camp question really will go to the fourth line. The Senators have added a bunch of players that could fit that role. You're looking at Noah Gregor, Nick Cousins. They already had Zach MacEwen. And can some new guys from Belleville jump up? Steven Halliday, Angus Cruickshank. They brought back Adam Gaudette, who lit it up in the AHL last season, goal scoring wise. So maybe they try to add him to a fourth line so that it's not just grit and toughness there. You get a bit of goal scoring as well. So, Alex, I think those are the three ones to kind of summarize. Where's Nick Jensen going to play? What's the bottom pair going to look like? And what is the fourth line going to look like?
I guess for you, Pilsy, the past 2 summers before this summer was the summer of Pierre, and there was all this change and excitement. And this year it feels much more tempered down, where Sands fans are have become cautiously optimistic, maybe not as positive as you, but for me, if you look on paper on at this team, one might surmise that they are a better team might than previous years. There's definitely not as much the glitz and glamour of previous iterations of this team, but how do you feel about this team heading into to training camp and heading into the season as to, you know, the P word, I guess, playoffs is always there, but just does this team with Steve Staios, does it fit a bit better than maybe it did in prior years? Because that's really how I feel about this team.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. Like Pierre Dorion was great at making big splashes, bringing in big players. But in hindsight, you're always thinking, scratching your head, like, well, wait, what was the plan for this guy? Like, what? Like, sure, Alex DeBrincat, high profile goal scorer in his prime. Everyone wants that on his team, but how are you going to fit him in the salary cap? Does he want to be here? Where, who is he going to play with all these things? So that didn't make a lot of sense. And then Chychrun, you're like, oh, nice. The Sens decor needs help. They're bringing in this two-way guy that's supposed to be able to play both sides. Well, that didn't really work out either. Whereas the big splash this offseason will work out in Linus Ullmark. That there's no questions about. Is he going to be the starter backup? Are they going to be a tandem? No, it's very clear he's the guy Forsberg's going to back up. So from that aspect, I love the splash Staios made. And then you look at the other pieces he brought in Perron, Amadio, Gregor, Cousins, Jensen. These guys aren't
Wow.
awesome splashes. Yeah, nobody was like, oh my God, I can't believe the Sens got Michael Amadio. What a game changer. But that's fine because they didn't need game changers. They need guys to fill in the holes and the roles throughout the roster to support those game changers that they already have in their lineup, in the Tim Stützlas, the Josh Norrises, the Jake Sandersons, the Drake Bathursons, these types of players, right? The Claude Giroux. Those guys are solid. They just need some other players that are going to be able to fill in the rest of the roster, but veteran players that are comfortable in a role they have and know how to fulfill that role. And I believe David Perron's going to do that. Like him or hate him, with the Zub altercation last year, he is a guy that can put up points. He battles hard and he's going to add a little bit of grit. And then Michael Amadio, perfect Swiss Army knife player, in my
I really
opinion. He can play left wing, center, right wing. He can play up and down the lineup. That's why Vegas loved him so much when he got there. And that's why some people looked at the contract and were like 2.6 or 3 years. That's a little bit much for Amadio, but I think they maybe needed to add a year and bump up the value just a little bit to convince him to come to Ottawa. And I think that could end up being the right play because they need a guy that, God forbid, if injuries happen, they can plug and play in different spots around the lineup. So I think this is a better team. Did they bring better players? Not necessarily, but as a team overall, I think they should have more success.
What's interesting that I think about a lot when you talk about guys like Perron, Jensen, Amadio, Gregor, Cousins obviously as well, is that it's guys in their 30s or late 20s, Ullmark as well, who's I think 30 or almost 30 soon.
I think it's 29, yeah.
I think he's 29, yeah. But you know, in being in the locker room with the team last year and when they're going through the struggles, and I remember Chychrun saying, you know, we can't just look to Giroux, right? Like other guys need to step up. We need, you know, a couple more voices. And then you look around the room with me and it's like everyone's my age. Everyone's 25, everyone's 24, everyone's 23. And outside of Giroux, there was really no, and I guess Hamnik, who was barely playing, no real guys that kind of were that steadying voice who'd been through the wars, been through the battles. And now with this group, they have a bunch of those guys. And I think that's why it fits better as a team. It's not just because, you know, like if you look at why this team has underperformed, a lot of it feels mental, not necessarily talent-wise, right? And now you have that collection of players that have the mentality to go into the playoffs, to be competitive, to be level-headed and not go up and down and ride the highs. So I think that's where I really think this team should be better. We might talk about the Atlantic Division and how hard it is to make it into the playoffs, but I think overall this team does make much more sense than in years prior.
Yeah, and I think it all starts from the goaltending. Like having a competent goaltender is going to change so much. The Sens ended up getting behind on the first or second shot. I believe it was 22 times. And this is a team that did not have the makeup to play from behind right off the puck drop every single game. And we saw the effect that was going to have. So I think a little bit more leadership and stability in the crease will also help out.
I guess with that, like it seems like you're very confident about him in Allmark in
Oh,
terms
yeah.
of how good he'll be with this team. And like I believe he's a legit goalie. Look at how well he played in Buffalo, and those teams were literally like some of the worst teams ever to play in the salary cap era, and he had great numbers. But I guess my worry is just until it happens in Ottawa, until there's a goalie that plays well in Ottawa for a sustained period of time, how can you trust, even a former Vezina Trophy winner from 2 years ago? Like, how much is it going to be also imperative on just the defense finally playing well in front of them?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing, right? Like, you can't, a lot of the blame goes to the goaltending last year, but then when you zoom out and Sens fans who have watched a lot of the games, you're like, well, yeah, the goaltending was downright terrible, but it's not like the defense helped them out. And Jakob Chychrun was not the defensive player we thought we were getting when he was acquired. And it just, I think Nick Jensen is going to provide a little bit more stability on the back end. And with the new coaching staff, hopefully you see an emphasis on how they play defense in front of Ullmark. And I think Ullmark's going to be a determined guy here, Alex. Like, he's a Vezina winner, and his team decided, nah, we're going to go with this young guy that they still don't have signed, Jeremy Swayman, still
Crazy.
without a contract. We're going to ship off a known Vezina winner that still has 1 year left on his deal. For not a great return, in my opinion, for the Boston Bruins, although they do get the 25th overall pick that they turn into Letourneau, I believe it was. Yeah. So I think Ullmark's really gonna want a chance to be like, all right, I've had to split the net almost my entire career. Even in Buffalo, he wasn't really the main guy, I don't think. So now he's gonna have a chance to be the guy, and I think it's gonna mean a lot to him, especially this will probably be the biggest contract of his life coming up. So he's got a lot of motivation, a lot to play for.
That's in it, what's interesting is you're literally saying exactly what he said to us media a couple of weeks ago at one of the events where he said, I haven't had the opportunity to be the number one goalie wherever I've been. And I just to have that is an honor, but also something that I'm really excited for. And I think he will thrive on that. It's interesting because I remember I asked him about never playing over 50 games. I think the most he ever played was 48 the year or
It's
something
under
along that.
50 for sure.
Yeah, when he won the Vezina, I think 2 years ago. And he kind of said, it's just a challenge and I'm excited. And so it will be interesting to see how he does with the workload. How can he manage it? Because we haven't seen that before. But I am optimistic about Forsberg as well as a backup. But overall, like for me, if he plays well and if the team plays relatively well in front of him and he has like, I don't know, a 917, 916 save percentage like he did in Boston the past couple of years. And well, it was I think 938 the year he won the Vezina, but then this team is going to be a close to a playoff team. If he's more in that 908, 907, like good but not great, then I'm like, I don't know if the Sens can make the playoffs. What do you think about that? Where it's like it's not that if he's necessarily great or bad, but if he's really good, then this team's going to be really good. If he's mediocre or decent, then this team's going to be like, do you feel it all lines on the goaltending, or am I just being way too simplistic with this?
No, it's definitely a big factor because last year, like, let's say the Ottawa Senators had just a bit below average goaltending. So let's say out of the 32 teams, they're like 20th overall in goaltending or low 20, something like that. That's not that bad, but they were literally the worst goaltending team in the league. 32 out of 32, easily. No questions asked. So all Ullmark has to do is be consistent. Honestly, Alex, I would even say if you're looking at a 910 save percentage from Ullmark, that's probably going to get the job done here. And Forsberg, I think, I don't want to say his injuries caused his bad play, but I think another year removed from those injuries, and with the mindset now that, okay, I know I'm the backup here. I know he's the guy. I think when Corpusalo was brought in, it was like, we're going to do a bit of a tandem here. And we thought that might work because tandem goaltending has been successful in the regular season for lots of teams recently in this NHL. But I think now, knowing that he's not going to have to shoulder so much of that weight, I'm talking about Forsberg, he's going to be able to relax and ease into the type of goalie he was a couple of years ago when the Sens gave him that nice 3-year contract.
I think with that, the other question is, I look to the forwards, especially the younger guys like Timmy, Brady, Drake, Josh Norris to maybe a lesser extent, but just their own play in their own zone that really hasn't taken that next step to be good to, even competent at some points. And I wonder how important just the coaching will be in that, but also maybe it's kind of put up or shut up time with this team as to playing good defensive hockey in front of their goaltenders. Because as you said, the goaltending was really bad last year, but at stretches, it was just awful in front, especially to begin the season, where it was just, pylons and guys, grade A scoring chances left, right, and center. And at a certain point, the goaltenders are going to get down on themselves. And then there's a little, there's a whiff one. And I think what Ross mentioned was the Chris Kreider goal, I think against the Rangers scored. I think it was shorthanded in the game in Ottawa. And he was like surprised he scored. So I always think of that goal. But I guess my question with that is just how much is it going to be not just the goaltending, even the defense, but the forwards this year taking that step and being much more responsible in their own end?
Yeah, and that's the thing too. When your goalies are that bad, it can't all be on them. We talked about the defensive woes, but for the forwards, they need to be better defensively as well, right? But in turn, like, I'm flipping it back to the goalies here. I don't mean to do that. It's usually a hashtag goalie friendly show on Locked On Senators podcast. But what happens is when you let a goal in on the first shot, you're down 1-0 2 minutes in. Now your team is like, oh crap, we got to cheat on offense to at least tie this and then to get ahead 2-1 before they score another goal. Let's cheat on offense a little bit and try to get back quickly here. And then that's when you run into defensive problems too. So I think having more stable goaltending is going to allow the Senators to feel more comfortable in playing a more defensive game and not that they are in such a rush and need to get goals back quickly, which can create turnovers, forcing passes, not playing responsible hockey because you're trying so hard just to score. And then it ends up back in your own net and they're in trouble. So I do think, not letting in that first goal is going to allow the Sens to settle into a more defensive game and bringing in veterans like Perron, like Gregor, like Amadio, these types of guys. They know how you have to be responsible on defense. And when you do that, you get rewarded with more opportunities with the puck and you get rewarded with offense later on. So I do think the mindset and the way this team's going to play overall defensively is going to improve.
Did you see Travis Green's nice starts in Vancouver and you'd be like, okay, this is the savior. We just need a good first 20 games and then this team will be okay. Like how imperative, I know I feel like I'm a broken record because it is a broken record, but just a decent start. I know Ross was talking about kind of splitting the first, I think, 28 games into best of sevens. Do you like is it they have to have an amazing start? Does it need to be just in a playoff race? Like what is like an acceptable start for this team in like the first 20, 28 games?
I think the main thing is it's hard to really put a label on it because then if you don't reach that label or that goal, like, is the season just over? Which unfortunately has been the way it's seemed for the Sens. So the way we worded it on our show on Tuesday's episode of Locked On Senators podcast was our biggest question is, can Travis Green get this team off to a good enough start that they're in the mix by the end of November? They don't need to be leading the division. They don't need to be on a 6-game winning streak or anything like that. It's just they cannot be on the wrong side of 500. If anything, they got to be above 500 by a decent amount. Because the issue is you get off to that bad start and guys, their head's not into it. They lose sight of the long-term goals, because there's like, well, we're so many games back. What does it matter? These 3 games we've got on a Western road trip, they're not going to affect us. It's not a big deal, whatever. And you start getting down in the dumps, and you're not able to kind of take it one game at a time because you just feel so out of it. And the Sens fans get that. A lot of Sens fans, I feel like by Christmas, they've checked out and they're like, well, can't wait for the draft, which is not where we want this team to be anymore. So I think the hot start is important. It's kind of hard to look at Travis Green's starts with the Vancouver Canucks and compare them to how that's going to go with this team. It's just so
It's
many years
very
ago and so
sure.
different. But I think having a good training camp is a big part of starting off well. You don't want to start where you feel like you're playing catch up on a lot of teams. So Travis Green's famous training camps, I hope those really put this team in a position where they're going to start the year off hot. And Brady Tkachuk still waiting. He's on baby watch. Get the captain to training camp, hopefully as soon as possible. Get that new dad strength in effect, and he can help this team have a hot start too.
I guess with that, like going to the forward group a little bit, because we've analyzed a little bit of the defense, but is it also, they have those peripheral players and Amadio and Perron, but is it also time for maybe Tim Stützle to maybe have maybe his second breakout season, but really go to from a star in this league maybe to a superstar and come close to that 100-point threshold?
I think for certain he's going to have a better year than last year. We learned at the end of the season he disclosed that he had a wrist injury fairly early on in the season. And in hindsight, that just makes so much sense. I mean, Tim Stützle only scoring one goal on the power play is probably even crazier than the goaltending stats or any other stat you want to pull out from the Sens season. One goal for your top talented, most skilled, I should say, forward on the power play is just not acceptable. You're not going to win like that. So, him being able to have a healthy wrist, be confident in shooting the puck more, I think it's going to open up a lot of doors because now, obviously, he's going to score more goals. Goals are important in hockey, not advanced analytics there. But if he shows teams that, okay, you got to watch out for me as a scoring threat, they're not going to be able to cheat on the pass as much because it was downright ridiculous how Tim Stützle would do anything to not shoot the puck. He was passing it back and forth too many times. Even we referenced Claude Giroux the one time was just like, Timmy, just shoot that. Do not pass that back to me. You got to shoot that there. And when you've got a weak wrist, you're probably not confident in your shot power. So that's why you're feeding it back more than you have to. So if he's able to shoot more, teams aren't going to cheat on the pass more. And that's going to open up passing lanes for him as well. So I think overall, it's going to improve this team's offensive abilities. And I don't think it's crazy to say he can get back to 90 points or even surpass it. 100 points, I don't know if I'm at that level yet with Tim Stützle, but the 90-point mark, I think, is a great, appropriate benchmark to try to be hitting for him.
Yeah, and you're talking about the wrist injury. Like in the locker room, you could see it for all season, just it all bandaged up. And at the same time, you talk about the power play, and they had, what was it, fifth or sixth best power play in the league 2 years ago. It was in the top 10. I don't have it off the top of my head. And he was at the head of the snake or whatever, however you describe it. And then last year, he wasn't shooting, and then it kind of, as you said, closes all the gaps, all the other opportunities for other players to kind of do their thing. So I think for me, it's the way for this team to become a playoff team is Allmark, as you said, is just so much better, even just by inertia, just being there and like a stable, capable goaltender. Tim Stützle goes back to a 90-point guy. Jake Sanderson might take another step. You have peripheral players that are, much more effective. How many times the past couple of years, it's like, do they get anything from their third line, right? Or their fourth line? And it seems as though this year they should have at least a little bit of pop in those areas. For me, the really big worries, as you talked about, the decor and just the lack of depth. Like if, let's say, Sanderson goes out for even a little bit, or Shabbat, right? It's like, who replaces those guys, especially on the left side, right? They have Cleven, but they don't really have a lot of lefties coming up in the system. And that's my really worry, is just this team has been plagued by injuries. Thomas Chabot has recently as well, obviously last year. missing, you know, almost half the season with injuries. So that's really where my worries lie heading into to camp, is just what happens there on the D-line, D-core.
Yeah, well, and that's why I was always a big fan of Erik Brännström. I know he's very divisive among Sens fans, but he was that Swiss Army knife on defense. He could play both left and right side. He mentioned he likes playing the right side. Now, do you want Erik Brännström in your top four for an extended period of time? No, but he can play there. And if you looked at his analytics, when he was playing up with some of those other players, they were almost always favorable. So losing Erik Brännström, I think if they run into injury problems with Thomas Chabot at the end of the year, which they seemingly do every year, unfortunately, that could be a player that you're like, man, I wish we had a type of guy that could do that. But he's gone. He's in Colorado, so we can't really focus on that. So that is going to be interesting. But that's when you're going to want a superstar player like Linus Ullmark to be able to be like, okay, I get it. The defense, we're down a couple guys. It's not going to be as sharp as before. I'm going to be the guy that steps up and elevates my game so that this doesn't turn into a disaster. And when you have a confident goalie like that, it can erase so many issues, even if there's glaring injury problems in a team.
For sure. With that, you know, Steos and Ullmark have kind of been coy about extension talks. Like, how do you feel about that? Like, does it feel like they're just gonna see if the, you know, the marriage works a couple months in and then sign a contract? Are you optimistic or positive about contract talks? Like, what do you feel about you know, a potential of a long-term fit between the Senators and Ullmark?
Sens fans are very used to star players coming over, and the first thing they go is, how many years does he have left on his deal? When's he going to leave us? We have abandonment issues, and there's a history for those problems and those traumas, Alex. So it is justified. However, I don't have that feeling with Ullmark. Like, it just, I don't know. He just seems like such a great guy. I think he's going to fit into this locker room. Like you mentioned, for a guy that's won a Vezina, that isn't even considered the best goalie on his team, that's got to put a chip on his shoulder. That's not an issue anymore. This is arguably going to be the biggest contract of his life. And where I get extra comfort is, I think Ottawa is a place where it's going to really be attractive to guys that have young families. If you're looking for, you want to live in the big city and you want the nightlife and you want fame and glitz and glamour, go to LA, go to New York, go somewhere else. Ottawa's not going to be your spot, and that's okay. But it's a great place to raise a family. And Swedish players historically love Ottawa. I mean, he's talked to Daniel Alfredsson. I believe the Carlsons have also reached out to him and let him know, hey, these are good schools, these are good neighborhoods, buy a house here, these kinds of things. And I think him and his young family are going to see the value of that. And he's going to be given a big contract when he's ready. I believe Ullmark holds all the cards. Whenever he's ready, I think Steve Steos is, I don't want to say he's going to bend over backwards, because that's not the leverage position Steos wants, but Steve Steos is going to be very agreeable to whatever terms he wants in a contract negotiation. I'm not worried that they don't have anything done and that it doesn't seem like they're that important, or it's not a top priority to start those negotiations. However, I think the kind of start that this team is going to have is going to dictate how Ullmark feels about signing up long term with this hockey club. So I would say I'm more positive about it than negative. Like, if zero out of 10 is I'm terrified he's going to leave and I already think he's gone, and 10 out of 10 is I think he's going to sign long term guaranteed, I'm probably around a six and a half, seven on that scale. So I'm not concerned at the moment.
Is that how much how much millions of dollars he'll get a year? Six and a half, seven? Like, where, what does that contract look like in your mind?
I think he's going to want a long-term deal. I'm going to say 5, 6, or 7 years, and I think it's going to be north of 6.5, between 6.5 and 8 million, I think, is probably somewhere that's appropriate. But who knows? Like, there's rumors that Swayman is asking for huge dollar amounts, and if the cap keeps going up, a star goalie is gonna want to get paid. Goalies are getting paid a lot more these days than they were in the past. But either way, I think if he has the season we think he's gonna have, he's the type of guy that if the Senators need to move some pieces around and ship guys out to create space for him, that's something they're going to have to explore.
For sure. How comfortable do you feel in paying a goalie? You know, let's say he plays great this year, and hopefully he does, right, for all of Sens fans. But does that make sense to sign someone who just will have just turned 30 to a 5, 6, 7 year contract on big money? And as we mentioned before, like the idea with Korpisalo, although it did not work out to say the least, was to have a tandem where you're not as tied to one goalie at big term and big money.
Well, I think the nice thing about this is it really seems like things are heading towards the direction of a Ullmark-Sogard tandem in the next season. Sogard is still on a two-way deal this year, but his next year of his contract is a one-way. So you're going to save a lot of money on a backup goalie making less than $1 million. So that's going to give you more room to sign Ullmark. I think a goalie in his late 20s is when you want to lock in long term because you've had enough sample size, you know what they're going to be like, but also they don't have those big miles on them where they're starting to get those hip surgeries that cause so much concern.
And that's interesting because he hasn't played more than 50 games. He hasn't been a Connor Hellebuyck or,
And he hasn't had those injury problems.
no.
Yeah. So
So
like this, if you're going to sign a goalie to a long term, he is the perfect sample of goalie you want to do that. So if they want to sign him long term and he's agreeable to that, get it done.
there we go. Get it done. Brandon Pillar. It's happening, guys. It's happening.
I hope so.
My other question, for this team is just who is the second line and third line center? Because I still don't really, and you can even argue fourth line center too. Like they do have a plethora of centers on this team, but it doesn't really you don't really know with Josh Norris's injury, as you alluded to earlier. Shane Pinto, kind of getting a bridge deal, but he could be slotted into the second line center. Like what Ridly Greig, I know just being around the team, like he never played wing before until the NHL, and I wouldn't say that he was super happy about it. I don't mean he was, doing anything unprofessional or causing ruckus, but I don't think he was super happy playing on the wing. Just what's your one through four centers? I guess two through four, because we know Tim Stützle is the number one center on this team.
So I've still got Josh Norris as a second line center. I know a lot of Sens fans think about moving him to the wing, or if you don't want to get that drastic about it, move him down to a third line center role. Josh Norris is still a very effective face-off guy. Really good numbers throughout his career. So I want him taking draws, even though it scares me a little with the shoulder injuries, and we've seen him get injured just from taking a draw. But that's where if this team's going to have success, you gotta push for the right pieces to be in the right spots. You can't play safe and have Josh Norris down in your lineup just because you want to protect him. So I want him as a second line center. I don't think Pinto's ready to be that second line center guy, and that's why a bridge deal happened. And I believe that's the right move for both sides, the team and the player. And you mentioned it earlier, is that bottom six has struggled to score. So I want Shane Pinto in a bottom six role with Ridly Greig on his left and either David Perron or Michael Amadio on his right. Hopefully that line can get clicking a little bit. But for me, at least to start the season, let's set this up. Tim Stützle, Josh Norris, Shane Pinto as the 1-2-3 centerman.
And how do you feel about the battle on the fourth line? Because as you said earlier, there is a bunch of players that Steve Staios has brought in, and it seems like a pretty open and healthy competition.
Which is good. You don't want kind of comfy spots in that fourth line for too long. I like Parker Kelly and I like Mark Kaslick, but for too long, it just seemed like they had those spots warmed up waiting for them. They didn't have to battle too much for them. And we saw how that went. It didn't exactly, they weren't able to provide enough offense and enough physicality that the lack of offense was okay. I think Noah Gregor probably has the inside track for fourth line center, but you got to look at a guy like Jan Jenik, who Staios acquired trading away Igor Sokolov. That's someone he's familiar with from his time in the OHL. I think he's going to have a chance. He spent a cup of coffee with the Arizona Coyotes in the NHL. Steven Halliday, even though he barely has any AHL experience, he's a guy that has size but also offensive ability. He could be in the question for that. I think it's probably a big battle between those three. Nick Cousins can play center, but I believe he spent most of his time on the wing in Florida, so I don't know if he's a top option for centerman there. But there certainly are different options you can make. Even Adam Gaudette is a guy you could throw in there as well. So I think the fourth line, even though it's like as far as moving the needle goes, wins and losses, it probably doesn't change too much who's playing there. It is a fascinating training camp discussion.
For sure. I guess the last one I'll kind of hit on is because I think my favorite player to watch on this team, and Tim Stützle dazzles all the time. I love Drake Batherson. Obviously Brady just, in your face, just scoring from all areas of the ice. But is Jake Sanderson, and just how amazing a skater he is, how quick he is, how smart. It feels like last year, he had a bit of a bump in his development, but then at the end he really rounded into form. Do you think this season for Sanderson could be that year where he really breaks out, not just from an elite defenseman to one of maybe the 10 or 15 best defensemen in the league?
I don't know if it'll go as far as saying 10 or 15 best defensemen, because when you start thinking about guys on those lists, it'd be pretty hard for Jake Sanderson to leapfrog them. But certainly, he is this team's number one center, in my opinion. And I believe a lot of Sens fans agree with that. I think he's going to get the opportunity, because in years past, it was kind of like, okay, Shabbat's down. Now we need you to be the number one center. But now I think going in, he is the number one center. I want him to stay with Artem Zub. That's a great shutdown pair that can shut down other teams' top offensive lines. While also being able to transition the puck up the ice, Jake Sanderson is an incredible skater and a very good transition player. Is he going to rack up points in the offensive zone? Maybe not as much as other teams' number one defenseman, but where he lacks in offensive talent, which he improved a lot
He
last
did.
year, I would say, he makes up for in just smooth transitional play that's really going to help the players that are elite offensively in Ottawa get the puck and do their thing. I think he's going to continue to improve on the season he just had. Maybe a little more offense, a little bit more consistency, and with a stable partner, I hope in Artem Zub, there's no reason why he can't continue to kind of elevate his game slowly as he progresses here.
There you go. There you go. Brandon Pillar says Jake Sanderson will win the Norse. No, I'm kidding. Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I will ask you one question, is because when I had Ross on, he said, having Brady Tkachuk on the show, which was obviously amazing, was kind of a white whale for you guys, and it
Big
was
time.
great to for you guys to. Is there anyone else on the wish list for the Locked On Senators? He mentioned Heatley, Alfredson. Who's kind of maybe the top of your wish list that to bring on your podcast?
Brady definitely was an absolute privilege to have him on the show. Amazing guy. So we appreciate his time in the centers allowing us to do that. Alfie, for sure, you gotta get him on. Heatley would just be so interesting. It feels like he hasn't really been involved in the hockey world, although I believe he was a scout for the Flyers, a European scout for the Flyers, or maybe it was Blues. He was randomly a scout last year. So he's kind of dipping back into hockey. So maybe we could
Maybe.
get him on the show. Chris Neal would be a guy that would be awesome. Obviously, everybody knows the Chris Neal story. I've got it. If you're watching on YouTube, I've got his little number retirement that went in the rafters. And I mean, Chris Phillips, most games played by an Ottawa Senator. So that would be amazing to talk to him. He's lived through a lot of huge moments, also has his number retired. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, we'd love to talk to Steve Steos and Travis Green. That would be great to kind of get their views on this team in today's eyes. But Brady was the big one that we were hoping to get, and we got it, and everything worked out great.
How did you feel like when you see him like pop on the StreamYard, and it's like, oh my God, like he's right there, and just kind of shooting the shit with him and talking and having, and it was a great podcast, and you guys got him to open up. But like, what was that like for you?
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, we prepped. Normally, Ross and I don't do a whole lot of prep. We're through 1,000, let's see if I can get this right, 1,100, and I believe it's 23 episodes. So
Okay.
we've kind of gotten the groove of things. It took us some time, but we figured it out. But for big guests like that, we like to have our interview prep, so we kind of know the way we want it to flow. But you can't be married to that either. If you get
No.
stuck on just your, you know this, Alex, if you get stuck on your line of questioning, you get lost in the interview and maybe you miss a key thing that he said that you should have followed up on, but you're so focused on your next question. So you got to leave room for that as well. But yeah, like the Brady Kachuk's the real deal. He's such a good dude. It didn't seem like he kind of had his media training guards up. He wasn't giving us cliches. He was laughing and joking about a couple things, telling us about guys on the team, giving us personal stories, things like that. So can't say enough good things about Brady Kachuk. He's the captain in the face of this franchise for a reason. Just an unbelievable hockey player and an amazing person as well.
Did Big Walt secure the interview for you guys?
I forget exactly how. Well, actually, no. The story starts with me going to Fort Lauderdale during the All-Star break last year, and Brady Kachuk, I think, was hanging out with Matthew during the
Yeah.
All-Star break after the game in Toronto. Obviously, we went down to Florida for a bit. Nothing wrong with that. And I bumped into him at the Fort Lauderdale airport. Went up, said hello, and I didn't know how to introduce myself because I didn't want to be like he knows who I am because. I mean, he's Brady Kachuk. He might not know who I am. That's totally fine and acceptable.
Yeah.
But I said hello. I'm a big fan, and I do a podcast. And right away, he's like, "Oh, you're with the Locked On guys, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." So he knew me right away. I said, "We got to get you on the show." He said, "Let me know. Let's figure it out." And we circled back a little while later, and then at the draft, the morning of the draft, Ross and I wake up in Vegas to a message from him being like, "Hey, sorry I didn't get back to you. Let's make this work." So we got Brady telling us he wants to be on the show, and we were heading to the Sphere in the Venetian. It was a great day. So that was awesome. And yeah, again, can't thank him enough for the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, you guys definitely, deserve it, and all the success to your show. And it's been so awesome to see you rise. I was joking with Ross. It's like every month I just say, oh, you guys are up another 1,000 on YouTube or whatever. So it's great to see you guys are just killing it, and you guys do such a great show. And
Thank you.
I the thing is, and I feel like I've said this the past 3 years for you guys, just we need you to get the playoff game.
Oh,
Like it's just like your show is
yeah.
doing so well. You guys are doing great. And it's just gone in December. And so I feel like for obviously, but you guys represent all of Sens fans. They just deserve a playoff team. It's been, 7 years of just drudgery and misery, and it's time. It's time, Brandon. It's time.
Yeah, I agree. Covering no playoff games in the 5 years we've done this is tough. So I'm ready for playoffs too, Alex. I love the draft, and Ross and I have found ways to
You guys have done, yeah.
we still get excited during April to June. But I want it to be excitement about Ottawa Senators hockey. I've never been to an NHL playoff game, let alone an Ottawa Senators playoff game. So I got to check that off the bucket list, hoping that happens sooner rather than later.
I was at the Dion Phaneuf overtime goal against Boston. I still
Nice.
remember that game. I still remember that
Oh.
game. The Carlson pass to Brassard.
Yeah.
In my it's somewhere it's always in the back of my mind. So we need that. We need Tim Stützle to Brady Kachuk backdoor game winner against the Leafs.
That'd be
That's
great.
I need if the Sens make the playoffs, I need them to play the Leafs. I just
Ooh.
it'll be to imagine game seven in Toronto, Brady Kachuk winning the game, and not maybe not overtime because that's too poetic, but I feel it. I feel it. I sense it. So
That'd be great.
it'd be great. Awesome. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. Is there anything, we've talked about your show just now that you want to plug for the listeners that people should stay tuned for at Locked On Senators?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Alex. Always a blast coming on here and chopping it up with you. Follow us on Twitter at Sen Central, Locked On dot Senators on Instagram. And I say this to everyone, but find a way to take the day off work from a home opener. If you're coming from out of town, book a couple days off. There's no feeling like the Sens home opener. We're going to be at the Glebe Central Pub before the game. They got the shuttle going again, the Sens shuttle. From the pub to the CTC is awesome. You don't have to worry about driving home, so you can just relax and have a good time. And the vibes are just so high at the home opener. Sens fans feel so good. It's always great meeting everyone there. And this year, up against the Florida Panthers, probably the Number one opponent I would not want to face in the home opener, Stanley Cup champions, and they just seem to have the Sens numbers. So we need Sens fans out there in full force, and it's going to be an interesting home opener. But my main thing, the plug, Alex, is if you haven't been to the home opener, do whatever it takes to get there. It's an awesome time, and we will see you there.
Well, there you go, and thanks so much, Brandon, for taking the time and doing this. And they always win. It seemed like they always win the home opener,
right?
And then it just falls to pieces. So hopefully, it's the beginning of a five
game. So, are you saying you want them to lose the home opener that way it doesn't fall to pieces like it usually does? Is that what you're saying, Alex?
If it means they'll have a good start to the season, just for Sens fans, I will do that.
That's but a sacrifice
overtime,
right there.
Overtime.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get the point.
Get the point. It's not a it's a Bettman loss. There you go. Yeah.
Love it.
There you go. Well, thanks so much, Brandon, for taking the time and doing this. And we'll do this in a couple months. Hopefully when the Sens are on a playoff ride or something like that. So everyone check out your podcast, and we'll be doing this again.
Thanks.